if you subscribe to flat Earth and you believe that all of the bodies, heavenly bodies, are within the dome, people who don't understand the flat Earth stuff won't have any idea what I'm talking about. But then you've got to trash the work of David Flynn, for example. It doesn't mean anything. It's not worth a dime, because and not only David Flynn, I'm just using him as an example. So many good researchers who have discovered so many things concerning the secret space program, concerning the moon, concerning Mars, and there is a host of stuff concerning Mars. And isn't it interesting that all this information is coming out on Mars? I would warn people who, if you're interested in flat Earth, researching it, fine. I think it's legitimate. I think it's compelling. I've researched it myself. I don't get mad at people. I don't put them down if they believe in flat Earth. But I would say this, a word of warning, be careful, because it might be a psyop to in anticipation of something that's coming concerning Mars, specifically Mars. So I would just warn people to be careful. I'm not saying it is, I'm saying it could be. And that's what concerns me about flat Earth. So I just want to put that out for people. I have reason to believe there are indications that flat Earth, that the flat Earth theory, maybe it wasn't started to be a psyop, but I believe at this point it is definitely being used as a psyop, even if it's true. And I know that sounds possibly contradictory, but even if it happens to be true, which again, I don't believe it is, but even if it happened to be true, it's being used to create chaos and division in the ranks of people who know things that are true for sure concerning the superficial fake space program that we've been witnessing for the last however many years it's been with NASA, and a host of other things. So just a word of warning. Legends concerning Solomon and his flying ship. I don't know if it's ever been validated. I have no idea, but I do know that there is a legend concerning Solomon's ring, which he used to conjure demons, entities that he enslaved for the purpose of building the temple. That's a very famous legend. In fact, I believe that legend is central to Masonic rituals and Masonic tradition. Is it true? I don't know. I do know this. There does seem to be an indication to me that it might be true, because Solomon, often attributed as the wisest man in the world, or considered to be the wisest man who ever lived, was somehow beguiled by the women that he was engaged with, the many women that he was engaged with, and convinced to worship these other entities. So it is apparent that Solomon was dipping into what is referred to as the mystery schools. So it wouldn't surprise me that there is truth to Solomon's ring, and whether he had a flying craft or not. The only thing about him having a flying craft is it seems like a strange omission from scripture. You would think that there would be some kind of a mention somewhere in the Bible, since we're told so much about Solomon, and even have writings from Solomon, that there would be some, even if only a vague reference to him having some kind of a flying craft. At least in my mind, that would seem, you would expect to find that. I'm not saying that means he didn't. I'm just saying that I have no indication outside of what others have dug up, such as David Hatcher Childress. In his book, Technology of the Gods, he breaks that down. And I think he makes some very valid points. But the ring, I do believe there is some truth to that. There is definitely reason to believe that Solomon did turn to the what we call the mystery schools, to the forbidden knowledge and worship of these entities. Where did the knowledge come from? And every indication is that it came from the Watchers. How they did it to me is quite irrelevant. The fact is that the technology came from somewhere, the knowledge came from somewhere, and also the evidence is actually overwhelming for giants and for other entities, and it may very well be that human populaces were able to do things that we can't figure out because they were using methods, maybe very simplistic methods that maybe are so simple that we can't figure them out. It really doesn't change anything for me. I don't think it changes anything in regards to the Genesis 6 narrative. It may be helpful to in understanding some of the megalithic stuff, how maybe humans were able to build those things. But there's a lot more to these megalithic sites than just moving heavy stuff.
Right.
I'd like to see that guy incorporate the same technology, whatever he's using to move the stone of the pregnant woman at Baalbek.
Yeah, exactly.
To shape the andesite blocks in Pumapunku. There's a lot more involved than just moving heavy stuff. We know for a fact that there are even current cultures in remote places that still move very large blocks to this day, and they do it with a lot of rope and a lot of manpower, and they erect, you know, megalithic stones. Well, so what? I mean, that's not that impressive. But when you take those megalithic stones, you shape them precisely, and you build these massive structures with them, that's a whole nother level of technology. It's not just about moving things. It's about the precision, and it's about the laser precision, truly laser precision of a lot of what's out there in terms of megaliths. So yeah, sure. I'm sure there's crossover technology that humans were using that was based on and adapted from technology that non-humans were using. I'm sure there's all kinds of crossover there. Long walkers. And is, in fact, a illustration of a true event. Steve was in contact with a gentleman who's flying an AC-130. I think he's still active duty. AC-130 pilot who was called into Afghanistan to pick up some cargo. The cargo happened to be a dead giant. I think it was 12 to 15 feet, somewhere
oh,
there.
Oh, wow.
And the giant, red-haired giant, pretty sure it had six fingers, six toes, had killed and devoured a handful of Marines before they were able to kill it. So this giant was moved, flown out of Afghanistan to a base in Germany. That's what that picture depicts. By the way, that AC-130 pilot, we're going to have him at some point in one of our episodes, possibly the next one. We're going to have his live testimony on camera. So the guy does exist. The story is true. We probably will have to mask his identity, but he is active duty, or at least was last time I checked. Fascinating story. Steve's the one who tells that story the best. I don't know all the little details he does, but it is a fascinating story. So I don't remember the rest of that question. Yes, giants still exist. There's stories of giants that appear all over the place, especially in remote areas. And even in the 80s, I always forget this guy's name. It's very difficult to find the information anymore, but there was a gentleman, I should have printed out the story. It was from National Geographic, I think. It was either National Geographic or Discovery. I think it was National Geographic. I can't remember his name. He was looking for a lost city in Peru, and they were hiking up a mountain. This was like from the 1982 or something. And he wrote this in the National Geographic in this article when he got back. And on their way up the mountain, they were stopped by a giant. He said he was the largest human being he had ever seen. It was a giant in every sense of the word. Stepped out onto the path, raised his hand, motioning them to stop right where they were. And I think he had a spear or something like that. So that was in National Geographic. An explorer who was associated with National Geographic. And so, yes, giants still exist in remote places.